The workforce development is in session.
You just gaveled the speaker. You understand this.
The speaker is our star witness today. We're going to go through this because we have Speaker Kotek here, and she wants to testify on 4127. We're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 4127 and then go to a public hearing on 4150 and then 4058. And then revisit 4127, if that's okay. Administrator Donovan, can you give us a brief summary?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4127A requires that the majority of members of the Oregon Education Investment Board be public educational professionals who work or who have worked on a regular basis in a public educational setting. It requires that four or more of members of that board work or have worked in a regular basis in the educational, in public education from kindergarten through grade 12, and it requires that two of those four members are or have been licensed teachers under the relevant licensure statutes, and it applies to board membership on or after January 1st, 2015. There is one amendment the committee has been asked to consider, the dash A3 amendments. They would add one member to the board and would require that one member of the board who serves on the board be a member of a school district.
Thank you. Speaker Kotek, welcome.
Mr. Chair, thank you for having me. Colleagues, always good to be on the Senate side.
School district board.
School district.
It said board.
Oh, on the A3?
Yeah,
school district board.
Yeah.
For the record, Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, North and Northeast Portland, and Speaker of the House. Really nice to be here. I appreciate the generosity of going first. So I'm here to speak on behalf of House Bill 4127A, which is a proposed change in or clarification of membership in the Oregon Education Investment Board. All of us, when we passed that bill in 2011, in the restructuring of creating this pre-K through 16 board, all understood the importance of improving outcomes in the state, 40-40-20 goals, which have now become the norm of when we talk about outcomes that we're trying to achieve in our schools. And we have the Oregon Education Investment Board as that place where we have policy conversations for the entire system. And what we've seen over the last couple of years is there's been more focus on K-12 in that discussion. While the other parts of the system are brought in, it's really focused on K-12, which got me to thinking that we might want to look at the membership because we have a lot of conversation in the Early Learning Council, which has a lot of designated expertise there. You have the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, which has expertise there. And then you have the OAIB. And when you look at the membership, it says it talks of 12 members plus the 13th member being the governor's appointee. And what you have in front of you with the engrossed version, A engrossed, is to say a majority of those folks should have or be currently have expertise in a public education setting. This is an education policy board. We want to ensure that the voice of educators, whether at the higher ed level or the pre-K level or the K-12 level, are the majority representation on that board. And that could be a wide level experience. And if you look at the people serving on the board now, many of these, that requirement is met. So it's not about, replacing the board. It's just clarifying going forward when we're not here and the governor might not be here, it's not just 12 members. It clarifies we're looking for educational background and expertise to add to that conversation. It also says of those 12 members, because so much is going on in the K-12 conversation in the OAIB, making sure that four of them have that requisite understanding of K-12 and that two of those individuals be licensed educators to make sure we have that in the classroom experience, that voice on a regular basis at the OAIB. I know there's another amendment. I tried to keep my bill very focused on educational expertise and trying to clarify that going forward, and I urge your support and happy to answer any questions.
Questions, Senator Cruz?
No, not so much a question, just a comment, Madam Speaker. You're heading in the right direction, but you're well aware there's a bill stuck in the Senate Rules Committee that would probably be an even better approach. So just thought I'd put that out.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, I am aware of that, and yes. There are plenty of good ideas in the building. There you go.
That's one idea.
Consistent.
Mr. Speaker, I don't want to put you on the spot here. You know that the governor's office feels like this may be changing things in midstream, and if you're going to change the complexion of the membership of the OAIB, we should also consider extending the sunset. And I was just wondering if you felt that was a reasonable sort of trade-off if that were done at the same time, maybe not in this bill, but done at the same time.
Mr. Chair, thank you for that question. It can't be done in this bill, as I think you probably realize from the relating
right.
clause. This was meant to be very narrow. I would argue that clarifying the level of expertise on the board could help the conversation in 2015 when the sunset is up. And I think a broader review of how the OAIB is functioning and that sunset will happen, obviously, in 2015. And I think this is a helpful clarification that could inform that conversation next year.
Okay. Any questions? We appreciate you coming down here and engaging us.
Thank you. I really appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
Could I ask a question of this one? I don't see anybody that escorted you. That shocks me.
I know. I'm unstaffed. Now I'm going back to my office. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4127 and revisit later today. And I will open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 4058. Administrator Bonnet.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4058 amends 404020 educational goals and statute to include apprenticeship programs registered to the State Apprenticeship and Training Council. The committee has been asked to consider the -3 amendments, which move the operative language. They accomplish the same thing, but move the operative language out of the main text of 404020 language and establish it in a different subsection of the same ORS 351.009.
Okay, thanks. Representative Gorsuch is here, the chief sponsor.
Good afternoon. Chair Haas and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chris Gorsuch. I am the state representative for District 49, which includes the cities of Troutdale, Wood Village, Fairview, and North Gresham. I'm here today to speak in support of HB 4058 and the proposed -3 amendment. This bill would specifically add career technical education to Oregon's educational goals. As you know, in 2011, the legislature approved what is known as the 40-40-20 goal. It states that by 2025, all adult Oregonians will hold a high school diploma or equivalent. 40% of them will have an associate's degree or post-secondary certificate, and 40% will hold a bachelor's degree or advanced degree. The middle 40 currently includes associate degrees and other post-secondary credentials. While the Oregon Department of Education and the HEC are making important decisions about what post-secondary credentials include, I believe we must make sure that critical training programs are not overlooked. So what HB 4058 clarifies is that apprenticeship programs are included in Oregon's plan for higher education moving forward. The -3 amendment solidifies that the apprenticeship program would have to be registered with the Bureau of Labor and Industries, Apprenticeship and Training Council, and meet their standards. These important criteria will ensure that only the highest quality programs are accepted as a measure of higher education in our state. Apprenticeship programs are a great fit for our educational goals because these programs often take an equivalent amount of time as college degrees to complete, involve many classroom hours, and require mathematical knowledge, mechanical ability, problem-solving skills, and probably most importantly, the ability to work collaboratively with a team. For some students taking advantage of these programs, college is not really the right next step, but apprenticeship programs can offer them a continuing pathway to a high-wage job. As a community college instructor, I understand the place that workforce development programs play in strengthening our communities and creating well-paid jobs. In my district, we have 3 apprenticeship training facilities that prepare workers for such living wage jobs as electricians, carpenters, and sheet metal workers. So HB 4058 and the -3 amendment, I believe, will ensure that such apprenticeship programs aren't overlooked as we work to meet our 40-40-20 goals, and I urge your support of this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm joined by Representative Johnson.
Was I invited to this party? I think so.
Yes.
Nice. Chair Haas, members of the committee, thanks. Mark Johnson, State Representative for House District 52, to a chief co-sponsor of this bill. Happy to be a part of this. For those of us who were involved in the creation of 40-40-20, I think it's always been implicit that the middle 40 would include, in addition to associate's degrees, certificates of relating to a career in technical education and so forth. What this bill does is doesn't redefine that, but I do think it shines a very bright light and just shouts that apprenticeship programs are and can be a significant part of what making up that middle 40. And I think that this is going to help us shine the light on this program in a lot of ways. I think it will help us to take the notion of an apprenticeship as a career and take that into our K-12 world and begin to, again, emphasize and begin to talk to students and their parents about career pathways can involve an apprenticeship leading into a journeyman licensure and so forth. That is a legitimate and an honorable and a profitable and a needful career for Oregonians. As we well know, our private sector is understaffed in regards to technical education and people who have specific skills in specific fields. We have, over the course of the last many years, de-emphasized this teaching and this instruction in our schools, and we're paying the price now. We know that there are jobs out there that are going unfulfilled, but I really think this is going to help to, again, redefine that apprenticeship. In addition to a four-year degree, in addition to a traditional associate's degree, that apprenticeship is a viable and honorable career pathway. I also serve on the apprenticeship task force, and this is also a topic that's come up as we've been talking about ratios of apprentices to journeymen and so forth, and trying to find some kind of a way to find a settlement that's good for labor, good for industry, and so forth. This is going to allow us to really delve into the current state of our apprenticeship programs, I think, and ensure that they're adequate to meet the needs, and I think the geographical representation across the state of Oregon, that somebody from Bandon to Baker to Burns to Bend to Portland all have access to the same kind of quality apprenticeship program. So I'm excited about what the potential for this is, so I would certainly encourage your support of this measure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you both. Questions of the two reps? Okay.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Guinea, John Mullis, and Kate Newhall.
Thank you, Chair Haas, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ilana Guinea, here on behalf of the 250,000 members of the Oregon AFL-CIO. I want to start by thanking you for hearing this bill and the Dash 3 amendment today. We are glad to have worked with a bipartisan group of legislators from both chambers. I know Senator Dembro is sorry that he wasn't able to be here for the beginning of this hearing, to bring you a bill that we think, without making any major changes in the law, is able to really raise the bar on making sure that at the implementation level of our 40-40-20 standards that are so important to the state, that we're making sure that we really are looking at everything that's included in that middle 40. Our state has been investing more and more money in career technical education, and as we do that, we want to make sure that we're following those students all the way through to the next step in their education. And we think that what this bill does is really helps make sure that everybody understands what that includes, that we are putting an emphasis on these programs that provide a solid education that people can take to anywhere within our state or to other states, so that they can earn good wages in careers, and not just be out looking job to job to job. We think that this is an important bill, and thank you for considering it. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas, members of the committee. John Mullis with the Oregon State Building Trades Council, which is an umbrella organization for union construction workers, and I'm also a graduate of a 6,000-hour apprenticeship program. And rather than repeating everything Ilana just said, I would just like to go on record in support of her comments and in support of this bill with the Dash 3 amendments. We've been working very hard, our whole industry has, over the last 5 to 10 years, and feel like we're gaining ground in the high schools and with principals and guidance counselors and making them see that careers in the building trades and other non-university paths or good viable alternatives, and I think this will help that effort, and I really hope that other industries that aren't as active in apprenticeship as the building trades are will look at this and maybe figure out a way for the workforce, the union, the employers to sit down and create a more structured program to help train their workforce for the future. So thanks for taking the time to hear this bill. We would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Hass, committee, for the record, my name is Kate Newhall. I'm here today representing the Plumbing Mechanical Contractor Association and the Sheet Metal Contractors Association. Together, both associations are over 250 employers in the state of Oregon. The vast majority of them are registered training agents that utilize the apprenticeship programs and do the training for them. The easy part, I guess, about going last is I feel like everybody has said everything that I would have said about this. I thought that Representative Johnson's point about really shining a light on apprenticeship, I think it always was sort of the intent of that 40-40-20 and that middle 40 that apprenticeship was included. I do really like the highlighting it and how valuable it is within the 40-40-20 goal. So with that, I'm happy to answer questions.
Questions of our panel here? Johnny, you took 6,000 hours of apprenticeship training to get the building trades job that you have now. Exactly. Well, they had programs.
Oftentimes you can get it done in 1,000 hours, but he took it 6 times.
Chair Hass, I think this is an ongoing apprenticeship program.
Okay. I just want to thank all of you for working with us, too, in the amendment and streamlining it, and appreciate that a lot. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. John Rakowitz and Joel Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Hass, members of the committee, John Rakowitz with AGC. We represent about 900 contractors on the commercial side of the industry, broad cross-section across the state. We're here to support the bill and the Dash 3 amendments. Like most industries, we face an aging workforce. The baby boomers sooner than later are going to be retiring. Current estimates from the Employment Department by 2020, they're estimating maybe 11,000 retirement. That's a big number to fill. On top of that, if the economy grows as it's currently projected, we'll need another 10 or 11 additional workers. So we're talking 20 to 25,000 workers that will need to be trained in order for our industry to be able to build the economy we hope that Oregon's going to be producing here shortly. So that's why we're here to support this. This is not going to fix everything, but it is a critical step. And I want to underscore that a lot of people have been working on apprenticeship in this building for multiple sessions. The task force that Representative Johnson talked about, we were deeply involved and are deeply engaged in that. We're trying to figure out how you actually build an understanding of apprenticeship, its value, and what kind of career path that can create for you. And it's going to take a lot more years, and we think this is one step that will help us do it. We offer in our industry a very, very livable wage, and frankly, a whole lot of people, and this is a national issue, we're engaged in this at a national level, a whole lot of people in the last couple of decades have this is a career path, an industry, and it's not just ours, the manufacturing section, that has simply is kind of gone off the radar screen. We need to bring it back on the radar screen. So happy to support the bill and answer any questions.
Chair Hassan, to the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher, Senior Policy Analyst with the Oregon Business Association, here to testify in support of the bill and the Dash 3 amendments. We appreciate that this bill highlights, the importance of apprenticeship programs and showing that, university degrees are not the only game in town. This is an important part of meeting 40-40-20 and a lot of really good jobs we had. Also graduate of Benson Polytechnic High School. So lots and lots of my friends went on to apprenticeship programs and had, like a year or two head start.
Questions? Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
We have business, labor, Republicans, Democrats. I think our chances are good on the floor, Senator Knight.
Chair Hass, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendment to House Bill 4058, dated February 18, 2014.
Senator Knope moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated February 18, 2014. Discussion? Objection? The amendments are adopted.
Chair Hass, I move House Bill 4058 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 4058 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Senate Bill 4058 moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation, and Senator Knope will carry this bill. Thank you all. Okay. I'd like to open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 4150A. Administrator Donovan, could you give us a brief synopsis?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4150A revises assessment and grading system standards for school districts. It is directly related to proficiency, evaluation, and grading. It has to do with essential skills learning demonstrations. It creates a task force for the department to study essential skills learning and how they relate to high school graduation rates. It would take effect immediately, but provisions would take effect over time. The committee has been asked to consider three amendments, the dash A9s, which would allow for the use of more than three indicators per content area per reporting category. The committee has also recently received the A10s and the A11s, and the sponsors of those amendments are here, so I'll let them explain that.
Okay. We have a couple of reps here. I'd like to speak on this. Rep. Gelter. And Representative Doherty, is this your bill?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Is there anything going on in the House today? Because you're all over here.
I think they're done for the session.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sarah Gelser, State Representative from House District 16, and I chair the committee from which this bill came over in the House. We are here because everyone knows the Senate is more fun. So House Bill 4150, there are a couple of things that are going on with it, but I wanted to remind you where it came from and give you a little bit of a flavor of the conversations that have led up to this bill over a large number of months. A very long time ago, in a session far, far away called 2011, we passed with only one no vote an education bill, which was a feat in 2011 to have such consensus on an education bill. And that bill was House Bill 2220. Now, when we talked about House Bill 2220 in this committee and in the House committee, I've gone back to listen to all of the tapes. We talked about the intent being to allow districts that wanted to pursue proficiency to be able to do so without their students being penalized when they went to college. So that if you wanted to give a student credit because they were proficient and they hadn't had enough hours, that they would be able to do that. So we saw this, we talked about this as a flexibility bill for districts. So fast forward, it went into effect this fall. And last spring, some of us started hearing about this House Bill 2220. I heard about it as a parent while sitting in the library with a principal chat and was talking about all of these changes that were going to happen because of House Bill 2220, and there wasn't going to be homework, and there wasn't going to be extra credit. And in my mind, I thought, I chair the Education Committee. Certainly, if we banned homework, I would remember having had that conversation. So I got out my phone and looked up the bill and was shocked to see House Bill 2220, who were the sponsors, Buckley and Gelser. And sometimes I forget things, but I was sure that I would remember banning homework. So we set about talking with the department about what did House Bill 2220 do. And to be very clear, House Bill 2220 did not prohibit homework. House Bill 2220 did not prohibit extra credit. House Bill 2220 did not require school districts to change their report cards or their transcripts or their quarter or semester grades. None of those things are there. Nonetheless, school districts were told that by the Department of Ed and believed that. When it became clear that that was the case this fall, Rob Saxton sent a letter to all superintendents clarifying that House Bill 2220 did not ban homework, it did not ban extra credit, it did not require anybody to change their report cards. But it persisted, and the problem is still here, even after all these conversations, because this is a syllabus that, and it's in OLIS, that came home with one of my kids just 2 weeks ago, and it says, Oregon House Bill 2220 requires student grades to be calculated from summative assessments. Examples include tests, labs, speeches, projects, or other measures of student learning. Coursework intended as practice for learning may be assigned and recorded with a 0% weighting. Examples include in-class assignments, homework, participation, and other learning activities. Talks about that for a while, and then it goes on to say, Oregon House Bill 2220 requires that students have more than one opportunity to demonstrate proficiency in a given standard. The highest grade that a student can achieve on a retaken standard is 75%. Now, I can assure you, if you go and look at the statute, House Bill 2220 says none of these things. So the question was, why not just repeal House Bill 2220 that caused all these problems? We can't, because House Bill 2220 did not say any of these things that have been attributed to it. So now you have in front of you House Bill 4150. And what House Bill 4150 is the ultimate non-mandate bill. It says decisions about grading belong to school districts. Superintendents and school boards and teachers can decide what to include in their grading, how to report their grading, whether or not to include homework and extra credit. Because I do not believe the legislature should be deciding what we grade. Now, if superintendents and school districts want to move forward with proficiency, which I think there's a lot of promise in proficiency, they should do that. But families and students need to know where the responsibility for that rests when they have questions about it. And it is not with each of us. It is not with the legislature as a whole. It is with the principals and superintendents. So when my daughter comes home and says, "You've destroyed my life and the life of everyone else, and everybody knows it's the legislature," it isn't. And this bill makes it clear that they can do that. Districts that have moved forward with proficiency, they can do it all. So that's what this bill does. There are two other pieces that were added to it that are slightly unrelated. One, it just asks Rob Saxton to continue the conversation with the federal government about the use of the new summative assessment so we can continue to get updates about the implementation and how they're working. And then the other has to do with our graduation of students and the demonstration of their essential skills. We have more and more students each year that are meeting all of their high school credit requirements, but they are not getting high school diplomas solely because they have not been able to demonstrate their essential skill on a test. So this bill asks the department to look at that, and it also clarifies that when students have been allowed to use accommodations to earn their regular high school credits, that they need to be allowed to use those on the high-stakes test. So if you were allowed to have your questions read aloud to you, or if you were allowed to use speech-to-text because of a learning disability you have, you should be allowed to use that to demonstrate your essential skill because you can use them in the workplace. And that is in here and will help some kids actually get diplomas this year and go to college. So that's a nice feature of the bill. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. We'll go to Margaret Doherty first and then take questions.
Okay. Thank you very much. For the record, I'm Margaret Doherty. I'm House Representative from House District 35, which is Tigard in Southwest Portland. And as a little bit of a background, I was a high school teacher for 12 years and then worked for the Oregon Education Association for another 23 and have been in schools and so on and so forth and still involved in schools. And I had a couple of weeks ago, one of my former teachers in Hillsborough Union High or in the school district call and say, "What can you do about this proficiency thing?" Because it is absolutely driving us nuts. And so I think all of you have a copy of what the proficiency is. And I think this, by example, this just shows, I kind of refer to it as proficiency on steroids, because I'm not going to speak for school districts and I'm not going to speak for superintendents, but in the past couple of years, more than a couple of years, there's been such a pressure on schools to say, "You've got to do this, you've got to do this, you've got to do this, you have accountability, it's going to be in the newspaper," and so on. So I think some districts did go overboard. But by example, this is just third grade literature. Now, we still have math, we have science, we have writing, we have reading. And so under here, and there's one thing to note on here, is there's 22 slots to write the child's name down, but most of the third grade classes have 35 children in it, so they'd have to make this even longer than it is. But in here are 17 standards and 113 proficiencies that a third grader is to meet just in writing in third grade. So I think the important thing on this and why I'm supporting the bill is that we want parents to know exactly how their child's doing. That has never been a problem. That's why we have face-to-face conferences, and that's why we have principal meetings and this kind of thing. We want parents to know how their child is doing. But we don't want to go through and, I mean, if I was a parent and got this on my third grade child, and then I also added reading and writing and everything else, I would feel sorry for my child. And not only that, if you go through and read some of the things that they have on here, I mean, I got a master's degree in education, and I didn't understand some of the things. So I think it's just very, very important to go through and you know, look and say, the intent of the bill was X, and so let's go back to the intent of the bill. Let's have parents know exactly how their child is doing and whether they need more help, whether they're proficient, and go on from there. So I encourage support of 4150.
Thank you both. I remember, Rep. Gelser, last fall, there was a time when this was creating lots of problems, but it was seemed to be due to interpretation and clarification, as you mentioned, and that once everybody got on the same page, it would be fine, and there was really no need for legislation to fix this. What made it change to, there is a need here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it really was surprising to me because I continued wondering about that, and I thought that for a while last fall. But the week before, the night before we had the hearing on this bill, I got another syllabus home that said the same thing. And I know, I mean, I've seen the communications that have come out from ODE. I have personally communicated. And again, it's districts can choose to do this. Absolutely. That is their, within their authority and within their right, and they should be making these decisions. But they should be making those decisions and taking responsibility for them, not saying that it's a requirement in state law that we can't grade homework and that you can't ever get better than a C. That's not what proficiency is. And I have seen kids that I know in my district who have been hurt by this. Their level of anxiety is really high. It's this bizarre combination of proficiency. You get credit for doing it right, but still within that A through F value system where a kid thinks they're entire worth is based on whether or not they have an A, B, C, D, or F. We've got kids that have always been A and B kids that are getting C's and D's and redoing work over and over and over and over again. Could be a great thing, but the legislature shouldn't be mandating that, and we should be making clear that the legislature never mandated that, that it's a responsibility that belongs to school districts.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my other question to you, sir, because I know that you are diligent about these things. Have you checked on administrative rules that may have been made to implement House Bill 2120 and see if those may have put into place things that even if we change this won't change that?
Senator Haas, Senator Roblin, that is where part of the problem took place. There was an initial set of rules that were adopted, and then they were changed. In addition, there was communication that, a word that I've heard a lot in this discussion is mushed, primarily related to mushing different kinds of grades, but there was also a mushing of information dissemination. People would call the department and ask for what's required under House Bill 2220. At the same time, districts were calling for what is the best practice in a proficiency grading model. So it's not, there's nothing in the rule that requires that there not be any homework because that rule was changed. The department has issued that guidance, but there's a lot of confusion because many districts do want to go to proficiency. And again, that's fine, but it's not mandated. It's when that district is ready and has the buy-in of their staff and their families and their students to be able to do it well.
Yeah. There are a couple amendments. Do you have any idea about, have you seen them, and do you have any suggestions about either of them?
Senator Haas, Senator Roblin, the one amendment that you mentioned that came from Representative Buckley, that's been kind of negotiated among everyone, the nines, are those the nines right now, and I've discussed those directly with Deputy Superintendent Saxton as well. We wanted some flexibility around that three standards. I have not heard of or seen those other amendments. That's been a challenge with this bill. Amendments have come very late and not been shared. I know in the House Ed Committee, we actually got one amendment 20 minutes after the work session had begun, and so that made it very difficult to consider them.
Thank you. Yeah, and I do appreciate the stakeholders and everybody getting together and working on what seems like a consensus amendment, the nines, which I think we're working off, and then there'll be something else to talk about here. So, are the questions of our reps? Oh, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Doherty, I'm reading from page 14 of 19.
Mm-hmm.
This is third grade, right?
Yes, it's third grade.
Use context clues to determine the meaning of unknown words and phrases related to a specific topic or subject area. My God, that's graduate level.
Yeah. Well, our children are much smarter now.
I mean, I can understand from a teacher's perspective, you have trouble understanding what they're trying to get at.
And I think part of this is not only the idea of progression, but it has to be something that the parents can understand. One of the examples they had in reading was that they wanted the third grader to syllabicate. Well, I don't know if I want my child.
I don't think you can do that legally in Oregon. But
yeah, I know. But I had to look it up. And again, it's what we used to call phonetics,
right,
and breaking words down. And so I think part of it was is that, you know, on part of school district, they want to do a good job. You know, their number one priority is to make sure that kids are successful. There's just absolutely no doubt about that. But again, it's one of these things of that fear of we need to do this, we need to do that. And so this is where the bill, and rightly so, kind of eases some of the pressure on the school districts. But I would like you to be able to do all of these, Senator Cruz.
Well, okay. Do I get extra credit would be the question.
I don't know.
Yes, but it's weighted as a 0%.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Ms. Chair, Representative Doherty and I had a conversation the other day, and we were remembering back when we had things called report cards, and suddenly that seemed to be able to determine whether a child was learning what they were supposed to. And just, you know, things used to be better, I think. So
the good old days.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Dembrough, I see you back here. Were you here to testify on this bill?
Yes, but now I can agree.
Okay.
He's the one you can ask the question of, but he's got a degree in English.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Michael Dembrough, State Senator for Senate District 23, Northeast, Southeast Portland. I came here to speak in support of the bill. I had hoped to get here a few minutes earlier, but, you know, was in a committee where the discussion went long, but I stuck it out because I knew my vote was needed, and then we had no vote. So, yes, it is one of those days. Anyway, I just wanted to speak in support of this bill. I think it clarifies the intent of the bill that we passed last session. There was some confusion out there about where some districts are telling parents and students that the state is telling them they must do this in a certain way. That was not the intent. We intended this to be really something that was up to local control, where the districts would seek participation from teachers, from community members in figuring out what's best for that community. And so I think this is a good clarification that will really improve things. Be happy to answer any questions.
Just another comment. I think, you know, if we allow teachers to spend their time actually teaching rather than this, it might benefit the students. You never know.
No, I completely agree. If I could just add, you know, I'm one of Oregon's two commissioners on the Education Commission of the States, and this issue of proficiency-based education comes up a lot in national conversations. And one of the things that, I mean, one of the messages that I hear again and again is, don't go overboard on these proficiencies. I mean, don't come up with a million different proficiencies that students need to do. Be selective, go deep, and keep it simple, because otherwise it just overwhelms everyone.
Senator Robin.
Because I know you understand this as well, I would say we could learn from apprenticeship programs and others who seem to understand what it means to be a proficient in a particular field.
I was thinking of that very thing. Yes, thank you, Senator.
Okay. Representative Johnson, are you here on this bill? Or
I would love to be, Senator.
Oh, that was a good question.
He's the other commissioner.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, Mark Johnson, state rep for House District 52. Proud to be a part of an all-star cast here today on this topic. I also am a co-sponsor of House Bill 4150. My involvement or my interest in this has been over the course of the past year or so as the K-12 world in Oregon has kind of grappled with trying to implement House Bill 2220 and the confusion that's ensued. Some of that I've heard from teachers in my own district that says, gosh, I can't take into account homework anymore. And I have students that come in and say, well, you can't make me because I can't be graded on it. And obviously that was not part of it, the equation at all. I also had a chance to attend a workshop at the OSBA conference in Portland in November, where the Department of Ed had a special workshop focused on this topic, where they were supposed to fill in all the gaps and provide all the answers. And I don't think I've ever been a part of a more dysfunctional meeting in my life. At the end of the day, I mean, people are literally ready to throw things at the presenters because they just couldn't give them the answers that they wanted to have and the certainties on how it, what this meant and how they would be implementing this at the local level and what they would be accountable for. So with that in mind, there is obviously a legislative intent to try to correct that, to try to clarify it, and I signed on the bill to be a part of that. Having said that, the bill does help to clarify the situation, but my contention would be, and I think the contentions of many superintendents around the state of Oregon, many in my district, some in Senator Knope's district, I think Chair Haas, perhaps your senator here in your superintendent in Beaverton has had some discussions as well, but the bill goes a little farther than it needs to because it goes beyond just simply trying to clarify the reporting of proficiencies and how those are achieved by students to gets into the development of grading systems also, and that is the rub that many superintendents are concerned about. It goes farther than it needs to. And I would just use as Exhibit A of that just the relating two clauses on the two bills. House Bill 2220 says relating to student assessments. But if you go to House Bill 4140, it then says the relating two clauses revises assessment and grading system standards for school districts. So it goes beyond what the original bill was, and I think therein lies some of the confusion and so forth. So I am the Dash 10 amendments that just came out today, and I apologize for the timeliness of it, but such is February, unfortunately. We don't oftentimes have all the time we wish we had to thoroughly vet some of these policy issues. Is the last effort by the superintendents to try to get to language that they're comfortable with, because basically the only thing that the Dash 10s do is they take out the mention of grading practices that you find in Section 3 of the bill. The Dash 9s were a great effort. They hit two of the concerns that the superintendents had. One was the number of indicators that need to be reported on. Three is now the floor instead of the ceiling as it was in a previous connotation of this bill. And then it revises a bit again the membership and the creation of the advisory committee at the local level to provide input to the superintendent, to the school board. So those are two of the concerns. The third concern is that the original bill still does leave in language in it, for instance, talking about that this advisory committee shall identify best practices in proficiency grading and reporting. If I summarize the superintendent's concern about that, it would be that typically the grading systems are the effort of the superintendent. They're what the board is accountable for, and those are much more highly involved processes than simply the reporting and the confusion or reporting that ensued from House Bill 2220. So we have gone ahead and had legislative council work late last night, and Hannah's here, and thank you for your wonderful efforts, Hannah. So if you read beyond, I'm reading in section sub 4 down to B, it says just simply identify best practices in reporting proficiency outcomes, determine the best method and format to communicate to students and parents a student's progress toward meeting or exceeding academic content standards, determine educator professional learning needs with respect to proficiency education, reporting, and proficiency outcomes. So it tries to narrow it again. To address the confusion that ensued, keep it on track, and don't delve into areas that, again, are another content area that, again, House Bill 2220 wasn't focused on. And therefore, I think my position would be, and the position of the superintendents, we don't need to go there at this point in time, especially in the short February session. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I would just add, Mr. Chair, that I do think the message has gotten through to the department about some of the confusion that has ensued in rulemaking, as it can often happen with good, well-intentioned policies. I'm confident that as we go forward from this day, whether these Dash 10s are adopted or not, that I think enough attention has been focused on this so that the rulemaking that would ensue from this going forward would align with the superintendent's concern and that it wouldn't delve into an area that would become problematic at the local level. So that would be my testimony. Happy to answer any questions.
I appreciate your work on this, Rep. Johnson. We did just get this amendment.
Exactly.
I know that previous conversations with you, you're okay with the Dash 9s.
Yes.
We did get another amendment from Senator Knope that changed the words grading to reporting on the original bill, and I was just wondering if that goes part of the way to align some of your concerns that you just spoke about.
I'm not familiar with. Was there a number to that, Senator?
11.
Oh, 11. Oh, yeah.
Might be newer than yours.
Might be newer than the 10s. So,
all right. Well, maybe you could look at those as we hear from some other witnesses.
Yes.
I was concerned about that because I don't see why it needed to have the A in both of them, but that's okay.
It was already there. Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Lori Wimmer and Hannah Vandry.
First, they delete A and they add A back.
No, they don't.
There's both.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to join you today. For the record, my name is Hannah Vandring. I'm president of the Oregon Education Association, and I want to first express our appreciation on behalf of the students in Oregon for all of the work that's being done to make these modifications through 4150. We're in support of 4150, and we're here to applaud the corrections that are being made to House Bill 2220. What started out as a bill that was supposed to provide students and families a more accurate picture of a student's progress in meeting Oregon's academic standards has been implemented in so many different ways across the state and confused and caused issues with our students and our educators. So we value communication with parents and students. We think it's a priority for us to ensure that parents and students understand exactly where they are in terms of the education process that they're going through. And we believe these changes through 4150 will be helpful. As president of the Oregon Education Association, I have the opportunity to travel all across the state and attend meetings of locals, president's meetings with the presidents from all across the state, and then also committee and cabinet meetings. And I can tell you at the beginning of the year when I ask, so how's it going? What are the issues? 2220 was at the top of the list. And people were talking about the implementation and how it was being put out in different districts in different ways. And one example was in a local meeting, there were six educators sitting there, and two of them were talking about the different ways that 2220 was being implemented in their own district. They were talking about how they were going to track the core subjects and how they were going to make sure they were reporting, and the conversations were very different about what was going on in their buildings. We also had a high school teacher who did a calculation, and as you heard from Representative Doherty about the third grade, and Senator Cruz, I appreciate the comments you made about, we actually, educators, we do report cards, and we were trained to actually understand if our students are learning and be able to report on that, and we do it quite well. But there was a high school math teacher who did the calculation. He has six classes. If you have 35 students in each one of those classes and you have the standards for math in which he was teaching, it would be approximately 250,000 check marks on boxes to see if his students were meeting standards. That's not a good use of an educator's time. Talking about, in some districts, full-scale grading program changes without any communication about why that was. It was said that that was required. I think as Representative Gelser shared with you, there were different implementations. Proficiency-based teaching and learning. There are districts across the state who are implementing, some successfully, some are having issues with it. But the key thing is you have to have a plan in place. Parents and students have to understand what the program is, and you have to have a clear path to communicating out with those students and parents. Having proficiency-based, one educator shared with me, she had 1,697 assignments that had not been turned in. And it didn't matter because they weren't told that they didn't have to turn in assignments because that was part of the program and proficiency-based. That's not necessarily helpful when you're trying to help a student. I sit on the OEIB, and we were talking about some of the implications of education and things that were going on, and one of the members shared that he hires individuals, and he had to hire triple the amount of individuals to keep the number that he needed in his business because they weren't prepared. Well, if you're told that you don't have to come to class, you don't have to do your homework, you're only responsible to show me the end result, that doesn't always work in business either. So I'm glad we're all working together to get this right. There are different subjects that lend themselves to proficiency-based as well. Math, it's much easier to use proficiency-based. Language arts, it's not so much. So educators who work with our students every day know best. And as you're talking about whether educators should be sitting and having discussions about grading programs and how they're implemented, they absolutely need to be part of this discussion, because they will be able to help you understand that with the new Synergy program, which replaced ESIS, which is the grading program that about two-thirds of our districts are using, proficiency-based doesn't work with the program. We have to get it right, and if you are not on the ground, you don't understand all of those issues. This 4150 fixes several issues that have been stated earlier. I won't repeat those, but we are in support of the Dash 9 and Dash 11 amendments. We believe that this will help our students be successful, and we look forward to ensuring that communications with parents and students is of utmost importance and will be effective. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Laura, do you have something to add?
Sure.
Go ahead. We'll
Mr. Chair, committee members, for your record, Lori Wimmer with the Oregon Education Association. And I just wanted to hit a couple technical points and also thank you all for your time. This has been an issue I know that's rattled around this building all session, and we are very thrilled to have so much support for this bill. And as you've heard, there was a perfect storm created when House Bill 2220 came online. It was the time when we were piloting the Common Core state standards and smarter balance test. We had this new data system Synergy in two-thirds of our districts, and 2220 all at once. And it created this data collection nightmare that has literally turned in many places in this state our teacher workforce into a data entry workforce with a lot of extra hours logged to try to put an overlay of reporting over the top of grading systems in some places, change grading systems in other places, figure out how to manually override data base systems in other circumstances. And it's been a lot of hours, a lot of frustration. That's why our members came to us and asked us to advance this concept. And coming up with a one-size-fits-all solution for a lot of different kinds of problems was quite the challenge. And so I wanted to also put on the record my thanks to all the other organizations that we worked with to make sure that what we did was something that offered flexibility and a solution at the same time. And that's all the Alphabet Soup and the department and a lot of other players who helped us perfect this bill along the way. And with the Dash 11s, one more perfection along the way, which we also embrace and are happy to support. I did want to say on the record that I know that it's the one question that a lot of folks had is whether the three elements per standard on page two of the bill, whether or not non-academic elements would be considered as a part of the report or the communication, which is more informal, whether that would in fact be behavior related. And we believe that when the committees who are doing proficiency education or proficiency grading meet to develop how they want to move forward from this point, they are going to pick those things that are academic, because that's the whole point of a communication with parents and students, is to explain to them where the kid is in terms of mastery toward proficiency to those standards. And so I wanted to make sure that was clear on the record. The reason we have the fact that the student behavior, so-called, should still be allowable and up to the district to define and use if they so desire, is that it's like the issue of accountants keeping two sets of books. They're doing their tracking on the student progress indicators. They're doing their grading of students, and what's happened in a lot of cases that's created this data entry problem is a duplicate set of books, in effect. And so we wanted to make sure that that wasn't happening. And so I wanted to make sure that was clear on the record. We do not support the Dash 10 amendments, but we are in support of both the 9s and the 11s, which we consider to be consensus of all parties. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Senator Robler?
No.
Senator
Bruce?
Yeah, I'm not objecting, and I know you're talking about content standards, but at some point in time, behavior is an important component, and it's part of socialization. So I think we need as we're looking further, we need to look at getting that back into the mix. It's a critical part of the education process.
Senator Robert?
I do not have a comment. I absolutely agree with you, and I understand the behavior things, but they need to be separated so that academic standards is what we're talking about.
They always were, but they were done before.
Yeah, but there used to be, even in my little report cards, math, this grade, right, and behavior on the same line. And I think they have done different kinds of things differently at times, and I want to make sure that we understand that the content knowledge is what the student is being graded for on one hand, and that there should be another category. I absolutely can accept that, and that we can stand, but again, it needs to be open so kids and parents know what is expected about what it is, and then you can grade those behaviors, and that's fine with me, and I think we do need to have those kind of conversations. But at the same time, for those of us who were more active than other kids in school, oftentimes our grades reflected our activity rather than our knowledge, and it was frustrating for us. So I just want to make sure that's clear.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Ogland, that's why we were very clear to talk about it as a communication, not a report or a grade.
Exactly.
And Chair Haas, Senator Roblin, I relate to that behavior. And I think one of the things that educators across this state are really interested in is getting back to where we're educating the whole child and being able to put the love of learning back in our classrooms. And right now the data entry that we're being forced to do is getting in the way of that. And our students deserve better, so we really appreciate the support from everyone in trying to put us back on the right path. Thank you.
Other questions? All right, thank you. And your document on the problem and the breakdown of the confusion is very user-friendly and helpful. Thank you. Chuck Bennett, Morgan Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators.
Oh, yes.
Thank you. Just takes a moment sometimes. I've gotten older. You know, I share Hannah Vandering's concern and kind of the frustration. COSA represents about 200 school superintendents. And I received over time about 11 separate issues related to this bill. That, if you kind of work out the math, would be trying to deal with 2,200 possible amendments. And I'm just pleased this thing has come down to really a bill that has been worked well in the House. We have then in front of you today the Dash 9s and Dash 11s, which have been worked out among all of the parties involved that I think resolve the various issues. This bill has done a tremendous amount to clarify the proficiency education issue. Our organization was supportive of Senate Bill 2220. We thought it represented a pathway for proficiency education being practiced in various districts. Clearly, some issues arose, and some of them, I think, as Hannah and Lori presented, really kind of left the path. And there is a need to clarify again what this issue is about, that it is not a mandate, that it is an opportunity to provide parents and children with a very clear understanding of where they are on a kind of continuum of education. We are very interested both in the 9s and the 11s. We believe both assist in continuing the completion of this bill in extending flexibility and really clarifying terms and practices in the field. So we are very supportive of the bill and the amendments as presented.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Morgan Allen here on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association. We just want to put on the record we're supportive of the Dash 9s and the Dash 11s as well. And this is something we'll continue to watch as it goes through the rulemaking process, and hopefully we all won't be back here in 2015 dealing with this issue.
But we probably
or we will.
Will.
Yeah.
Nice to be hopeful.
Let's do it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Randy Dalton, Jessica Adamson.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Haas and committee members. My name is Randy Dalton. I am currently the principal of Malala High School, and I sit on the Business Education Compact Board, whom I'll be representing today. The Business Education Compact is proud to be working with education and district leaders for the past 30 years to advance education in Oregon, providing the professional development and in support of proficiency-based teaching and learning, and it's one of our current activities. We've been proud to partner with a number of districts across the state as they implement the proficiency system. As we understand the intentions of House Bill 4150A, the goal is to clarify some of the misunderstandings associated with the implementation of House Bill 2220. One of the key misunderstandings of the districts was whether non-academic factors, such as behavior and attendance, could be included in grade reports. BSC has always believed that nothing in the House Bill 2220 prevented such factors from being included in the grade reports, and we fully support the clarification in the bill on that point. Measuring and providing communication to parents once a year on progress towards academic skills and knowledge based solely on academic progress, not non-academic factors, is a priority of our BEC. Based on our conversations with OEA, it's understanding that this is indeed the intent of 5 subsection B on page 2 of the bill. We'll want to ensure that once a year, parents receive communication from the teachers as they progress toward the standards, the academic indicators. Information on the non-academic progress is important and may be made during the same communication, but the discussions should be separated. We believe it's important for parents to know how the students is progressing on the academic knowledge and skills and how to be successful in the long term. In addition, the BEC fully supports requiring districts to undertake the efforts to implement proficiency-based teaching and learning established by an advisory group. When we work with districts, we ensure such a group is formed. And implementation works best when there's a group of all the stakeholders there to have a part to see that success, the system be successful. We believe it's critical that districts provide members of the advisory group training from the start on the proficiency implementation so that everyone has a common set of knowledge for discussion and decision making. OEA and BEC have agreed to work together to address this issue in the 2015 session. BEC also believes it would be of great value to have the advisory group identify and develop best practices for weighting of non-academic factors. And the purpose would be to ensure that teachers implement proficiency, that the use of non-academic factors in the grading system would be similar from classroom to classroom within the school. The BEC appreciates the work to develop the Dash 9 Amendment. We believe that important changes exist in the amendment, including enabling school districts to utilize an existing committee for the advisory group, as well as lifting the limitation on academic indicators on page 2. We strongly urge the committee to adopt the Dash 9 Amendment. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Jessica Adamson on behalf of the Business Education Compact. We just recently received the Dash 11 as well. We have no objection to that amendment, and thank you for the committee's time.
Great.
Thank you.
I want to call up the Department of Education, Jan McComb, if she's still here.
She was trying to hide.
She was trying to hide, but we saw her.
She should always sit in the front seat.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, Jan McComb, the Oregon Department of Education. As you've heard from all of the prior witnesses, there was a lot of confusion when House Bill 2220 was passed and enacted, and House Bill 4156 to clarify that, and the Department of Education is very supportive of anything that clarifies that language. As I understand it, 2220 was passed to make sure that those school districts that were doing proficiency education could still do it. And I think the language of the bill and then our rule went a little bit further than that original intention. And so House Bill 4150 brings it back, I think, to that original intention. The bill defines proficiency education, so we all have a common understanding of what that means.
It also spells out that teachers don't need to assess students against all the standards, just three. We've heard anecdotal reports about some districts that were making their teachers use hundreds of standards, and that was, I don't believe, ever the intent, and it was never our advice to do that. The amendments that Representative Gelzer added to the bill state that students who are getting additional support in their schoolwork should also get that additional support when they're doing their work samples to prove their essential skills. And that has been ODE policy, and so we are very much supportive of that. They also direct the Department of Education to evaluate graduation rates in light of the essential skills to see what that relationship is. And I know the State Board of Education, when they enacted the essential skills, they were very sensitive to that topic. And we have no objection to doing that. And the department is doing that now. I don't really have anything more to add to that. I'm happy to take your questions.
I do have one, and it's just a clarification, because hopefully you have that one. But when it was amended and it came over here, it has a statement from the Department of Education, shall negotiate with the United States Department of Education to determine the appropriate use of the new statewide summative assessment as it relates to proficiency education and proficiency grading. And I just need a clarification of what that all was supposed to mean.
So the dash 8 section now reads, I believe, that the Department of Education shall negotiate with the U.S. Department of Education to determine the appropriate use of the new statewide summative assessment.
Right.
Right. And that no later than December 1 of this year, the Department of Ed, in consultation with other entities, shall submit to the interim legislative committees a report on the resources needed for the full implementation of that new assessment system. As you probably heard, we're moving from OAKS to Smarter Balance. And so the Department of Education is already in those negotiations. And so if this section stays or if it goes, we're still doing that work. And we're already reporting to you all on how those negotiations are going. And so we don't have any objection.
This is related to the waiver and the stuff with the State Department of Ed, correct?
Yes.
Specifically, okay.
Yes.
Have you seen the dash 11 amendment?
I have.
Seems to just change grading to reporting on page 2.
Again, we are in favor of anything that clarifies the language. And if it's language, we're good.
That's what we're asking, isn't it?
I believe it does.
I'm not sure Smarter Balance is harder.
I'm not sure either, but it is.
Okay. No further questions? I think we have heard from everybody who's asked to be heard on this bill, and we are ready to go into a work session on this bill.
Absolutely. I think we are in work session.
Yes, we are.
We're ready to execute.
Who are we executing?
Bruce.
Really? Chair Hass, I adopt the dash A9 amendments to House Bill 4150A, dated February 13th, 2014.
Mr. Chair, I'm confused. Senator Knobel just said he was going to adopt that amendment, and he didn't actually make a motion, so I'm just trying to figure out.
Chair Hass, I move to adopt.
Move. Okay, that's better.
The dash A9 amendments to House Bill 4150A, dated February 13th, 2014.
Senator Knope moves the dash 9s to House Bill 4150. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none?
Chair Hess, I move to adopt the dash A11 amendments to House Bill 4150A, dated February 20th, 2014.
Senator Knope moves the dash 11s to House Bill 4150. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none? So ordered. Amendments are adopted. We do not have the final fiscal analysis on the 11, so we're going to move to suspend the rules.
Yeah. Okay.
Get ahead of the.
Yes.
Get out of the.
Okay. Chair Hess, I move to the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking final action on HB 4150, as amended without a fiscal impact or revenue impact statements.
Senator Knoat moved to suspend the rules for the purpose of taking final action on House Bill 4150 without the fiscal impact or revenue impact statements. No discussion on this motion. Objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Chair Hass, I move House Bill 4150A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knoat moves Senate Bill 4150A as amended to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Beyer?
Aye.
Senator Cruz?
Aye.
Senator Roblin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Knoll?
Aye.
Chair Hass?
Hass votes yes. The measure passes, and Senator Cruz will carry it. Okay. I hate to say I got that one out of the way, but I will say it. I do want to thank all of the various stakeholders for their flexibility, especially in the last few days, to find some consensus amendments there and get this through. Appreciate it very much. All right, so we will reopen our public hearing on House Bill 4127, the bill that changes the complexion of the OEI.
Yeah, so we move those to this one. Probably knows what's going to happen with that
on the public hearing.
Morgan Allen, I know you've signed up here.
Good afternoon, Chair Hass, members of the committee. I'm Betty Reynolds, and I'm speaking today as a member of the Oregon School Boards Association Board of Directors. I'm also a member of the Westland-Wilsonville School Board. The Dash 3 amendments would add a school board member to the Oregon Education Investment Board. And as elected officials, school board members are a direct link to their communities and are responsible for implementing state education policy. For example, achievement compacts are agreements between school boards and the OEIB, but school boards don't have a seat at the table in designing those agreements. Oregon is a diverse state economically and geographically, and education solutions vary greatly by school district. For example, what's effective in Klamath County School Board with 80 school buses covering about 2 million miles a year might not work for Park Rose School District with nearly 11,000 students and 67 languages spoken. School boards need to hear and be heard regarding education policy so that the solutions are as effective as possible in helping students achieve. The OSBA has been very supportive of 40-40-20 goals and is committed to closing the achievement gap. Our rapport with the OEIB has been very positive, and we continually look for ways to become involved to partner with them in helping students achieve. To date, our involvement has been appointment to two advisory committees, and I greatly appreciated serving on those committees, but it's not the same as having a seat at the tables for policies we're required to implement. The OSBA is very grateful for the support by the legislature and your leadership in supporting education and in helping students achieve. School boards have a major responsibility in closing the achievement gap, and we need a voice in setting education policy for which we're responsible, and we would urge you your support of the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 4127. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Morgan Allen here on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association. We're asking for the committee's support for the A3 amendments, which, as Ms. Reynolds indicated, ensures that a locally elected school board member will have a seat at the table and, more importantly, a vote on the deliberations and the policymaking of the OEIB. During the 2013 session, the House actually endorsed this idea. There was a bill that came over to the Senate that didn't come out. So 48 House members have already endorsed the concept of adding a school board member to the OEIB. And as Ms. Reynolds noted, I do want to note that Dr. Golden has been fantastic to work with, and her staff have been fantastic to work with, and they're very open and receptive to our questions and responsive to our concerns. But our members, our school board members, strongly believe that they need to have a vote on the OEIB. And again, what our amendment does, it doesn't do anything to the speaker's bill. But in addition to the changes that the speaker's bill makes, it adds one more board member to the OEIB, taking it from 12 members plus the governor to 13 members plus the governor, and says that that additional seat needs to be filled by a school board member. So I know, I just want to take a moment. I know the executive branch has raised some concerns, and Mr. Chair, you raised some of them, and I want to take a moment to respond to that. And I think the first concern we've heard is that the OEIB was not intended to be a slotted or stakeholder or special interest board. But if you look at the members of the OEIB, they're all very easily identifiable. They all represent almost all of the major players in public education in the P-20 system. They all represent special interest groups. They represent business and labor. So we don't see what the impact of broadening that representation by adding a school board member. We don't see that there's any detrimental impact to adding that school board voice to the folks that are already on the OEIB. You know, one of the other things, and you mentioned this, Mr. Chair, is something about this isn't the right time to make that change. But unlike most other boards and commissions I'm aware of in Oregon, the OEIB members, they don't have a set term limit or a number of times. Essentially, the sunset exists, so theoretically the current OEIB members can only serve through the sunset, but it's not a two-year term or a four-year term, or you're not, you know, on for two-year terms or 1 3-year term. It's once you're appointed, it's at the discretion of the governor to make changes to that board. So we don't see there has been one change because there was an unfortunate incident with one of the OEIB members passed away, and they appointed a new person, and it was obviously not a school board member, which brings us here today. We just don't see an opportunity to expand the OEIB or change that membership without actually expanding the size of the OEIB. So that's why we're here, and we'd certainly be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. You haven't spoken to the underlying bill of the new education.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we're supportive of broadening the representation of K-12 and educators and parents and school board members on the OEIB. So we are supportive of the underlying bill, and we hope that the speaker would view this as a friendly amendment to the bill.
And what of the proposition from the executive branch to agree to this in exchange for removing the sunset or pushing it out of
the Mr. Chair, speaking only for the Oregon School Boards Association on that matter, we have certainly signaled to the governor's office that we're willing to have that conversation. But I think it's going to be very difficult for the 12 or 1,300 locally elected school board members across Oregon to be very excited about the extension of that sunset unless that they have a voice and, most importantly, a vote on that board.
Okay. Questions? No further questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have no one else signed up to testify on this bill, and we will have to revisit this, House Bill 4127, when we meet next. And we have no other work before us. So thank you all. We are adjourned.
Do we have a meeting?